Okay. Ready to get started?
Yeah, let's do it. Rolling forward, Dr. Sister Science Facts.
Welcome to the Rolling Forward podcast.
I'm Dr. Alicia Rowland.
I'm Dr. Stephanie Rowland.
We are both physicians and researchers.
That's right. I'm a psychiatrist and Alicia is a pediatrician. And we spend part of our week seeing patients, working mostly in emergency medical settings, and then part of our weeks doing research.
And part of our weeks podcasting.
That's true. We have become podcasters now. Maybe the sisters, maybe the friends, honey, the doctors. Whoa,
rolling forward, Dr. Sister Science Facts. Our goal at Rolling Forward is to break down the healthcare news because there is so much of it.
So much of it.
And help families understand what's happening with healthcare in America.
And so today we're going to be talking about Dr. Oz. And we are talking about him today because he has been nominated by President Trump to lead CMS, which is the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. And his confirmation hearing is this Friday, March 14th at 9 a.m.
Dr. Mehmet Oz, made famous by Oprah and by his own daytime talk show, has been tapped by President-elect Trump to run the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, the federal agency that provides health coverage to more than 160 million Americans. His Senate confirmation, however, could be rocky as they dive into his past, sometimes questionable health care claims, and his investments in privately run Medicare Advantage plans.
So today, we're going to tell you more about Dr. Oz himself. We're going to talk a little bit more about what CMS actually does, and then we're going to bring up what are some concerns that health experts have about this appointment.
And there are some concerns that people have, but let's start at the top. Who is Dr. Oz?
Dr. Oz is maybe one of the most famous medical doctors in the United States.
I think he's been called America's doctor.
I think Oprah Winfrey called him that.
That's true. But before he was on the Oprah Winfrey show, he had a long history in medicine. His father was a medical doctor who moved to the United States for residency and then became a thoracic surgeon.
But his family's background in healthcare actually extends far beyond that. His grandfather actually founded one of Turkey's largest pharmaceutical companies.
So he's got a grandfather who's leading a pharmaceutical company, a father who's a doctor, and he also becomes a doctor.
And he becomes a cardiothoracic surgeon.
So he starts by doing his undergrad degree at Harvard. He gets his medical degree and his MBA at Penn, and then does his residency at Columbia.
He initially started practicing medicine at Columbia University in New York City and had quite a successful career. And I think most famously in the late 1990s, he performed a heart transplant on the brother of one of the Yankees managers.
Yeah, his credentials in medicine are top notch. And he's won a number of prizes and awards and received honors for his medical work. But in the 1990s, some concerns at Columbia started to emerge when he was practicing something called therapeutic touch, which it's hard to say what that is since that's not an evidence-based technique, but it sounds like healing people through the power of touch. And there were concerns from people at Columbia about this. You know, there are some types of osteopathic manipulative treatment, which is when physicians trained in osteopathic medicine try to diagnose, treat, or prevent health conditions through manipulation of the musculoskeletal system. But as far as I know, that's not what he was doing. It sounds like what he was doing was saying that he was manipulating human energy fields in order to improve people's health. So those are two different things than what you might receive from an osteopathic trained medical doctor.
So Dr. Oz's therapeutic touch was, as he described, a form of, quote, energy therapy, which involved waving his hands over a patient's body to balance their energy field. It was stopped in order to protect Columbia's reputation.
And I also did my residency at Columbia, and this is not something that was being taught to the residents there. So this has not become mainstream medicine in the decades since he tried this at Columbia. More concerns emerged around Dr. Oz's research, and in the early 2000s, he was asked to withdraw a presentation of his medical research from a major medical conference. Disputes remain around why he had to withdraw it. He says one thing, the medical organizers say another, but overall, that's a pretty rare occurrence. As someone who's presented at dozens of medical conferences, I rarely hear about things like this happening, so that's pretty concerning.
And this is the point where he starts transitioning into a more public persona.
He started appearing on television in 2003. And this was not the Dr. Oz show. This was a short-lived TV show called Second Opinion. It didn't really go many places. But what it did was it got him to the same room as Oprah Winfrey. And then she invited him on her show, the Oprah Winfrey Show, as a health expert for 5 seasons. And that really launched him into his career as a television star.
So per the Internet Movie Database, he appeared on the Oprah Winfrey Show more than 60 times. But per Dr. Oz, he says it's probably closer to 80.
And that close relationship is what helped him start his own show, because Oprah helped support him in launching the Dr. Oz show in 2009.
The Dr. Oz show ran for 14 years. He has 9 daytime Emmys, and it ran from 2009 to 2022.
And it's created such a following for him. He has nearly 14 million followers on social media.
That's wild.
It's so many followers, and he is such a platform. And so from there, where do you go except a career in politics, I guess? So his first foray into politics started during President Trump's first term, when he was appointed to serve on the President's Council of Sports, Fitness, and Nutrition. In 2022, he decided to run for a Senate seat in Pennsylvania.
That was a highly publicized, highly controversial race, Dr. Oz versus John Fetterman.
And even though he lost that, that hasn't stopped him. He's now been nominated by President Trump to lead CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, during the second term.
We talked a little bit about the Department of Health and Human Services on a previous episode. A large portion of the budget of Health and Human Services goes to the Centers for Medicaid and Medicaid Services, called CMS.
We're going to stick with CMS from now on, because that is a mouthful to say each time. But that's what we mean when we say CMS. And they're instrumental in how healthcare is delivered in America.
A large role for CMS is to manage and oversee public health insurance. This includes Medicare, which serves people over the age of 65 and some individuals with disabilities. It covers Medicaid, which provides health insurance to individuals and families below a certain income threshold, as well as CHIP, the Children's Health Insurance Program, which provides health care to children whose families don't quite qualify for Medicaid.
And CMS also oversees the health insurance marketplaces, which is where people who don't qualify for these types of public insurance can try to connect with and buy lower cost insurance.
And these public insurances cover a huge proportion of the American people. It's estimated that just under half of the children in the United States are covered through either Medicaid or CHIP.
So in thinking about Dr. Oz's appointment to lead CMS, I think one of the first concerns that's really emerged is his feelings about healthcare. In the United States, we don't have a right to healthcare in the same way that other countries, say, in Europe do. In the United States, because of historical reasons, political reasons, healthcare is tied to workplace. And so typically people get their health insurance through their jobs, as opposed to being part of a standard government insurance plan like it is in Belgium, where we're both from.
Dr. Oz said in 2013 that people without insurance don't have a right to health care, only the right to access a chance at health.
And that's concerning, because CMS's role is to provide a public health insurance option for people who may not have access to healthcare through their workplace. So there are people who are retired and not working, so they're not getting insurance through their jobs, and that's when Medicare steps in. There are people who may be disabled and unable to work, and so they can get health insurance through Medicare or Medicaid or both under some circumstances. And then there are some people who are employed but not at jobs that are paying them enough or that provide insurance as a benefit, and those people will have access to healthcare through programs like Medicaid. It is a confusing constellation of different programs as opposed to everyone having access through a government-sponsored plan, but this is the plan that the United States has come up with. So it's concerning that the person asked to lead these public health insurance options, which exist in order to make sure that people do have access to healthcare, doesn't believe that people have a right to healthcare.
RFK Jr. has made similar claims during his confirmation hearing, saying that the government and the people should not be responsible for paying for your health care if you're making poor health decisions.
So overall, putting him in charge of an agency like this is continuing that turn of HHS away from providing health care to the people.
The concerns about Dr. Oz have been longstanding and have followed him throughout his career. For many years, Dr. Oz used his television show to promote dietary supplements, often making these totally unsubstantiated claims about their effectiveness. He has described certain supplements as the, quote, holy grail of cancer prevention. He has said things are magic weight loss cures.
I want you to write it down. Garcinia Cambogia, because it may be the simple solution you've been looking for to bust your body fat for good.
Now I've got the number one miracle in a bottle to burn your fat.
Lightning in a bottle. It's a miracle flower to fight fat. This little bean has scientists saying they found the magic weight loss cure for every body type.
And given all of those millions of social media followers he has, when Dr. Oz says something, people believe him and they turn away from evidence-based treatments, like, say, chemotherapy or radiation, which has been proven to cure certain types of cancer, and instead follow these supplements and other alternative medicines that he's recommending. Alternative medicine absolutely plays a role alongside evidence-based care. What's concerning is that he doesn't always balance these together.
And it's been found that a lot of these supplements that he's been endorsing are not evidence-based, they don't have any scientific research behind them, and in some cases, they were found to not only be not beneficial, but actually cause harm.
In 2014, the British Medical Journal, which is a peer-reviewed medical journal, looked at 40 different episodes of the Dr. Oz Show and found that fewer than half of his health recommendations were supported by evidence.
That same year, he was called to Congress to testify about his endorsement of, quote, magic weight loss products. During that hearing, there was a lot of back and forth about his powerful platform and the fact that he was using it for financial interest.
You played me some quotes from this, and they were shocking.
Do you believe that there's a miracle pill out there?
There's not a pill that's going to help you long-term lose weight and live the best life without diet and exercise.
Do you believe there's a magic weight loss cure out there?
If you're selling something because it's magical, no. I'm second-guessing every word I use on the show right now. I've heard the message. I get it.
So Senator Claire McCaskill from Missouri said, quote, the scientific community is almost monolithic against you in terms of the efficacy of a few products that you have called miracles. He, in the same hearing, conceded that his claims often, quote, don't have the scientific muster to present as fact, and said that, quote, my job on the show, I feel, is to be a cheerleader for the audience.
But a cheerleader who is taking in the money.
Taking in so much money. His net worth is currently estimated to be between $90 and $330 million.
I'm sure this is all from seeing patients, right? Accepting public. That's how much doctors are worth, right? So we're both laughing because that is a type of wealth that you don't get from being a physician and seeing patients. Having a net worth estimated between $90 and $335 million, that's something that really comes from other ventures that he's had into medicine, like his ties to the healthcare industry.
I think a lot of the discussion around Dr. Oz recently has been his financial portfolio and his conflicts of interest. And he has so much money vested in different healthcare stocks. He has $600,000 worth of stock in the United Healthcare Group, which is the nation's largest provider of private Medicare plans. He has $5 million in holdings in a private company that operates a chain of infertility clinics. He has hundreds of thousands of dollars invested in for-profit hospital chains and in AI companies that work in hospital systems.
And he gets so much income from touting some of these products that he talks about in his shows. For example, he's a global ambassador and advisor for a company called iHerb. This is a website that sells health and beauty supplements. He's got up to $25 million in stock from this company. And he says things like, oh, these products might actually help with Alzheimer's. And so by using the platform that he's developed, he then suggests that people buy a product that he has investments in.
On his ethics filing to the Senate, he has pledged that he will sell the vast majority of his multi-million dollar holdings. Although his stance on some of these stocks have remained murky and unclear, particularly around his position at iHerb Company. And there recently have been multiple amendments to his ethics filing to clarify.
And some of the senators who will be asked to review his appointment to lead CMS, they have concerns about this because he's made a lot of money when he uses his platform to advertise these non-evidence-based treatments.
He'll also be in a position as head of CMS to boost a lot of the companies and products that he has supported and has vested interest in.
And like Alicia says, there's a lot of concern around this because it's not just these non-evidence-based treatments, supplements, other things that he's talking about on his show. It's that he's going to have a role in deciding how healthcare is delivered. And changes to that, there are things that he can personally profit and gain from. And that brings us to Medicare Advantage.
Stephanie, what is Medicare Advantage?
So as a refresher, Medicare provides health insurance for adults over 65 and some younger people with disabilities who qualify. Like healthcare in America, Medicare is not simple.
It has a number of different parts, and it can be hard to follow.
So when you're talking about Medicare, you start with Part A, which is the hospital insurance. Then you have Part B, which is medical insurance. And then Part D, which provides prescription drug coverage.
I'm sorry. I know the ABCs. And you just skipped C. You went A, B, D.
That's right. I did skip C because A, B, and D is part of the traditional straight Medicare that you'll get from your state. And then C is a whole other thing. If you have Medicare Part C, that is also known as Medicare Advantage. And it's a way where you privatize Medicare and you bundle Part A, B, and D into one seemingly more straightforward plan called Medicare Advantage or Part C.
It's currently an opt-in program, so individuals can choose to have a Part C or a Part A, B, and D.
And people who support Medicare Advantage, they say things like, it offers cost savings and care coordination that when you go with a private health insurance company, they're going to give you extra services like dental or vision.
That sounds amazing. What's the catch?
Well, private health insurance companies, they're here to make money. And the way that they make money is by limiting services. And so, you know, they'll say that they offer dental and vision, and they do, but it might be like $160 a year. And anyone who's ever had to buy glasses, like me right now, my daughter just took my glasses and threw them on the floor. She's a toddler. And I need a new pair of glasses. If you've been in that situation, you know glasses cost more than $160.
Medicare Advantage also severely restricts the number of providers. And so, particularly if you live in a rural area, the nearest specialist might be 100 miles away.
And it's hard to know if your current doctors are in or out of certain plans. If you've ever tried to verify your insurance coverage, it's so hard to know. So Medicare Advantage gives you this really limited network of providers. And if you see anyone outside of that, you're going to have to pay a lot of money. And also, if you want to see a specialist, you're going to need a referral.
It also has a lower sticker price up front when you see it. And you're like, oh, this might be a more affordable option. But then there's the sneaky, sneaky coinsurance.
Coinsurance, that dreaded coinsurance. So Medicare Advantage comes with coinsurance, which means that you owe a certain amount of the bill out of pocket. So if you go see a doctor and your insurance has a copay, that means that you owe a flat payment or a copayment per visit. I go see the pediatrician. My copay is $20. I pay $20. I go see the pediatrician a second time. My copay is $20. I pay $20, no matter what I get in that visit.
Coinsurance is paying a certain percentage of the final bill. And so, for example, if you go to the pediatrician and it's $1,000 and your coinsurance is 10%, then you have to pay $100.
Or if you go to the pediatrician and you need a couple extra services, like one time we went and my daughter needed breathing treatment, that bill's going to run $2,500 maybe. And then your coinsurance is 10%, so you'll owe $250. So the cost can really add up quickly.
When you start thinking about inpatient hospitalizations and when people are very sick, say there's a medical emergency, someone needs a breathing tube, they need to stay in the hospital for a long time, an ICU bed is estimated to be about $10,000 a day.
And so your coinsurance, it can be $2,000 a day. It really, really adds up. So overall, Medicare Advantage on the surface seems great because it's a simplified way that is promising cost savings. But overall, a lot of people, especially those who have health needs, find that their costs end up being higher and that they have more hurdles to go see the doctors that they need to. And about half of people do try to leave Medicare Advantage plans within 5 years of enrolling. It is not so simple to leave, though, because once you've entered a Medicare Advantage plan, you may find yourself ineligible for some of the perks of straight Medicaid, like Medigap, which are these plans that can help with unexpected costs.
So Dr. Oz has really heavily promoted Medicare Advantage for a long time, including on his show, without advertising that he was actually benefiting from that.
With Medicare Advantage, you can get a plan with $0 monthly premium, which could mean lots more money in your piggy bank.
He had for-profit Medicare Advantage enrollment companies on his show. He became a licensed broker for this for-profit company in almost every state, and he was planning to sell Medicare Advantage himself directly to viewers.
When you show me these clips of him speaking to seniors and saying things like, I would get Medicare Advantage, you should get Medicare Advantage, this is in your best interest. But without talking about some of the details we just went into, and without revealing that he was being paid by the companies offering Medicare Advantage to do this, it's something that really worries me about his conflicts of interest.
And it's largely thought that if Dr. Oz heads CMS, that he will try to privatize Medicare.
Where everyone gets enrolled in Medicare Advantage unless they specifically say no. And that will be fundamentally changing how many seniors get healthcare.
And healthcare is so confusing that it's going to be hard for people to fully understand that change.
Especially as America's doctor keeps telling you how good this is for you without revealing his personal financial ties to Medicare Advantage companies and without revealing some of the more nuanced details of what makes up Medicare Advantage.
Another really big concern that Democratic senators have brought up is his stance on reproductive rights.
And it should concern all Americans, regardless of their political affiliations or personal beliefs over elective termination.
While he was campaigning for the Senate seat, he said that reproductive rights should be up to, quote, women, their doctors, and local political leaders.
I want women, doctors, local political leaders, letting the democracy that's always allowed our nation to thrive to put the best ideas forward so states can decide for themselves.
I mean, well, I heard that. I'm just imagining myself in an exam room talking to one of my patients, and we'll just have our local political leaders just join us for this private health discussion. I mean, that was an absurd thing to say. no matter what your political affiliation is, do you really want your local political leaders sitting in your private health conversations? Is that where we are now? I mean, it just sounds very 1984 that the government is going to be a part of your personal healthcare decision making.
He has on his website said that he is, quote, 100% pro-life, and he supported the overturn of Roe v. Wade. And there are a lot of concerns about how these positions could change the way that CMS is run.
And because CMS oversees Medicare, Medicaid, the Children's Health Insurance Plan, as well as health insurance marketplaces, a lot of Americans are getting their health insurance through one of these portals, and insurance currently provide access to contraceptive services.
CMS is also the enforcement agency for EMTALA, which is the Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act. This came up a few times in the RFK Jr. hearing, and it's a law that affects me every day in the emergency department. This law essentially says that all Medicare participating hospital is required to treat any patient who arrives at their door in need of stabilizing medical care.
So when a patient comes in and they are ill, even if they don't have the right insurance for your hospital, even if they don't have enough money, you must stabilize them and address any life-threatening issues before you transfer or discharge them.
So, for example, as a pediatric emergency physician, I've had several instances where adults with gunshot wounds walk in and I have to medically stabilize them and make sure it's safe before I transfer them to an adult facility. Or, for example, when a pregnant person walks in labor, I have to deliver that baby if they're actively in labor because they are not safe to transfer per the EMTALA law.
Even though you're a pediatrician and you don't typically treat adults, and so you wouldn't typically treat an adult with a gunshot wound or an adult woman who's delivering a baby, but you're an emergency provider, and so you provide those services and you help ensure a continuity of care and that that person safely arrives to the next point of medical care access. And this is something that I thought we all would have taken for granted in the provision of healthcare, but somehow it became really heated after Roe v. Wade was overturned.
When a pregnant person arrives in an emergency department with a life-threatening complication of pregnancy, per EMTALA, hospitals are obliged to provide life-saving care, even if that care requires a termination of pregnancy to save a mother's life.
These are heartbreaking situations when they're in the ER. These are people who are often pregnant with a long-desired child, something that they're really looking forward to, but they're in a situation where continuing this pregnancy will kill them. Hospitals are obliged to offer life-saving care. And under EMTALA, hospitals have to save their lives.
The interpretation and enforcement of EMTALA in the context of abortion has been subject to ongoing debate and a lot of litigation. Federally, CMS has issued guidance stating that EMTALA requires hospitals to provide emergency abortion care under the guidance of the Biden administration. Some states have enacted laws that attempt to restrict or prohibit EMTALA-compliant abortion care. However, these laws generally are preempted by the federal law. The Supreme Court has not definitively ruled on the question of whether or not EMTALA requires abortion care. However, lower courts have typically upheld the CMS guidance and has required hospitals to provide emergency abortion care when necessary.
There is a lot to take in there because EMTALA affects so many aspects of providing emergency health care in this country, and starting to change it in small ways can lead to big downstream consequences. So I think that's definitely a concern of many health experts as they consider Dr. Oz's appropriateness to lead CMS.
So the confirmation hearing is scheduled for Friday, March 14th at 9 a.m. in the Senate Finance Committee. This was the same committee that held the first day of the confirmation hearing for RFK Jr.
And you can listen to it online, or if you're local to DC, I think you can go and hear it in person. This is going to be a very important time when we're going to learn more about Dr. Oz and what he plans to do in this role leading CMS. And that's something that's going to affect all of us living in this country.
It'll be interesting to see how this evolves. it's expected that he is going to be confirmed, given that a lot more controversial candidates have previously been confirmed.
I didn't know that. I thought that the Medicare stuff.
Oh, no, this is like not at all controversial.
Oh, wow. Okay. I really thought he was a little bit more controversial, but, you know, we'll be watching those confirmation hearings, providing updates as things go along.
It'll be interesting to see how the future of CMS evolves during this administration.
Interesting is one word.
I mean, I didn't say exciting.
Concerning is another.
I mean, I think, what is
scary.
It in French? What's the word I'm thinking of? Where it's like fantastic means not like fantastic.
Oh, yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about.
It was something that was noteworthy, but not necessarily positive. But I think the changes that are coming are going to impact millions of Americans, and we'll be with you here as they evolve.
Thank you for tuning in. This is the Rollin' Forward podcast.
I'm Dr. Alicia Rollin.
I'm Dr. Stephanie Rollin.
We are on social media.
We're on X and Instagram and TikTok and Blue Sky.
You can always email us at Rollin' Forward. That's R-O-L-I-N forward show at gmail.com.
Or send us any of your inquiries on social media. We're always happy to connect and hear what's on your mind. Thank you for tuning in today.
Until next time. Rolling forward, Dr. Sister
Science Facts. We need the word. If you know the word, something that was noteworthy but not necessarily positive. Germans, I'm sure, have a word for this. They have a word for
French
everything.
French people have a word for this.
French people have a word for this,
too. I just can't think of it.
We'll get back to you with the word.